This is January the 27th, Sunday morning. We're doing Nehemiah. We had started into chapter 2. And to kind of put things into perspective again, to think about how things are, Nehemiah is coming back to Jerusalem, or he's going to Jerusalem. People are already there. There's already nobles that are there. There's already the people of Israel. They've been there since the time of Zerubbabel and Ezra. So they are already established there. And you have those that are more or less rulers that set themselves up among the Jewish people. You have the princes and the nobles that were there. So they're already established, and they're within the communities round about, living and so forth. And the time that Nehemiah comes, he comes with the great host of material, of all the lumber and so forth, the trees that were cut down. They've got all that they're bringing in that Artaxerxes allowed him to have. He also has the army that Artaxerxes sent with Nehemiah to make sure that they had safe travel and so forth. So you have this big caravan, more or less, coming in. And we looked at last week that those that were in opposition to the Jewish people saw that coming in, and it grieved them and so forth when they saw this happening. But the thing to remember also, and to keep in mind on this, is that Nehemiah gets there, and he's 3 days that he does his rest or whatever, but he doesn't do anything for 3 days. And naturally, the people are going to be wondering, you know, what's going on? Why is he here? What's happening? He's been here. He's brought all this stuff in. What's going on? It is also not a standpoint to where they had an election to appoint Nehemiah. Nehemiah has come in, and you also have those that are rulers that are already there, but they become subservient to Nehemiah. When you think about it, they are still under the rule of Artaxerxes. They're under that rule as far as him being king. And here comes Nehemiah with letters from Artaxerxes, granting him safe travel and so forth. So naturally, the Jewish people, it's not that they're going to appoint him, but they recognize him, that he has come with authority from the king. It's not that Nehemiah self-appointed himself to be ruler over them and to take this in, but naturally, they're going to see that with his letter that he came with his army of Artaxerxes that come with him, with all this timber and lumber that's come with him. So naturally, they're going to become subservient to him and see, you know, we're going to give preference to Nehemiah because of his position, more or less, that he's come from the king. So bear that in mind when we look at this. So he arrived at Jerusalem in chapter 2, and for 3 days, in verse 11, he came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days and hadn't done anything. And so we're starting there that the journey would be a long 4 months, and it would have been dangerous, as told in Ezra chapter 8 and verse 31 concerning Ezra's, that the hand of our God was upon us, he said, and he delivered us from the hand of the enemy and of such as lay in wait by the way. So there would have been, back in those days, along the trodden paths that they had, the highways and so forth that they had established, that there would have been those that would have been laying in wait to do robbery, to rob, to steal, whatever, or enemies. So Nehemiah has already went through all that, and now he's faced also, or going to be facing opposition from those from Samaria, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem. We find in verse 12 that under the cover of darkness, Nehemiah took just a few men with him to ride with him to survey the walls and the gates of the city. In verse 12, I saw a rose in the night, I and a few men with me, and I did not tell anyone what my God was putting into my mind to do for Jerusalem. And there was no animal with me except the animal on which I was riding. This is more or less under the cover of darkness. You could say under secrecy, that he was going out and surveying the damage, that his first time there to see what's happening. In the last 3 days, and on this inspection night, he had not told anyone of his plans, as stated in verse 12. Of what he was going to do to Jerusalem. And in verse 16, And the officials did not know, he says, where I had gone or what I had done, nor had I yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, and the officials, or the rest who did the work. He hadn't told them anything concerning his plans. He hadn't told them what God had put in his heart to do on that. So we see as he goes through this inspection the enormity of this endeavor, because Jerusalem was very large. It had a city with an outer wall and an inner wall, and with that it had 12 gates. The gates were used of importance for the particular aspects of what they had done in Jerusalem. You would have had gates that they would have had to where they would have taken refuge out, the dung. They would have had gates where they brought all the animals in for the sacrifices around the temple. They would have had a court gate. They would have had a gate where they brought in water and so forth. So they had several gates. And with that, we find that there are 12 gates around the city of Jerusalem that are listed that would have to be repaired. Because if you remember, all the gates and the walls were destroyed and burnt. You have in chapter 2, verse 13, along with chapter 3 and verse 13, you have the Valley Gate that is mentioned there. The Valley Gate. You have in chapter 2 and verse 14, along with chapter 3 and verse 15, you have the Fountain Gate. You have in chapter 3, verse 1, the Sheep Gate. And that, of course, would have been where all the sacrifices would have been brought in through the Sheep Gate. You have in chapter 3 and verse 3, you have the Fish Gate, where food and so forth would have been brought in. In verse 6 of chapter 3, you have the Old Gate that is listed. In chapter 2, verse 13, and chapter 3, verse 14, you have the Dung Gate, or the Refuge Gate, that would have been listed. In chapter 3 and verse 26, you have the Water Gate that is listed, where they would have been bringing in fresh water and the supplies there. In verse 28 of chapter 3, you have the Horse Gate that was being repaired. In verse 29 of chapter 3, you have the East Gate. In verse 31 of chapter 3, you have the Gate of Mikkah. In chapter 8 and verse 16, you have the Gate of Ephraim that is listed. And in chapter 12, in verse 39, you have the Prison Gate that is listed. So all these gates were of vital importance, and they would have to have been repaired. And this is what Nehemiah went around to search out to see what actually had to take the work that had to be done. In chapter 2, verses 13 through 15, we find that Nehemiah takes account of the work that needs to be done as he views the walls and the gates of the city. It was so bad that it is recorded that in places, access could not be gained for an animal to pass through with the rider because of the debris and the destruction that had been done. He went out at night by the Valley Gate in the direction of the Dragon's Well and on to the Refuge Gate, inspecting the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were consumed by fire. Then I passed on to the Fountain Gate and the King's Pool, but there was no place for my mount or his animal to pass. So I went up at night by the ravine and inspected the wall. Then I entered the Valley Gate again and returned. So we see here the desolation that Jerusalem is laying in. And the people had not done anything with it that had come back with Zerubbabel and Ezra. So this is still the condition. With the walls broken down, the gates burned with fire, they would first have to remove the rubble and get all that out of the way before anything new could be constructed. This would be a very great and long task when you're talking about removing all that rubble by hand. And you would have to take it outside the city and have it stored somewhere or burnt or however they had to do it. But all of that had to be cleaned up first before they could construct and make new stuff. With the mention in verse 17, he said, "Then I said to them, you see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate and its gates burned by fire. Come, let us rebuild the walls of Jerusalem that we may no longer be a reproach. Again, this is what disturbed Nehemiah back under the king's court, is that Jerusalem was a reproach, mainly because of what the city and how it looked now. And it wasn't the greatness that it used to be. And now it was a reproach. With the mention of the rulers, the priests, and the nobles of the Jews, we can conclude that this indicates a time after the return of those under Zerubbabel and Ezra. With this group, Nehemiah encourages them, upon seeing the condition of Jerusalem, to rebuild the wall around Jerusalem, that the city would no longer be a reproach. So you have that set of people, the priests, the rulers, and the nobles, that had not done anything. Now bear in mind what comes into play too is with these rulers and nobles of the Jews, that they would, as we'll find out later on, are the ones that oppressed the people. The nobles and the rulers had fared better since the return, and so therefore they would have oppressed the younger ones, or the ones that were poor, didn't have much, and we see later on, we will, that there was a complaint that came about on that because of what the nobles and the rulers were doing. So bear in mind, you've got different classes of people that are going to be there. You've got the rulers, the nobles, the priests, and then you're going to have the common people or the poor. So you're going to have that there. In verse 18, we find further encouragement that Nehemiah relays to them how God had blessed him for this work and the king's word that was spoken to Nehemiah. Again, this laid on Nehemiah coming from the king, which would have probably been the reason that the people would have been subservient to him and let him take the leadership role that he did. In verse 18, I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me, and also about the king's word which he had spoken to me. Upon hearing these words of Nehemiah, people agreed to rise up and build the wall and prepare themselves for this good work. When he told them, then they said, let us arise and build. So they put their hands to the good work. So the people are encouraged that they have the support of the king. They have the support of Nehemiah. They see the materials that's been brought from the king, so naturally they're ready to start the good work. Verse 19 tells us now that Sanballat, Tobiah, and Gershom, when they heard of what the people were going to do, they laughed them to scorn in opposition. It is mentioned that there was despisement by these three upon the people, and with that there was a false conjecture or accusation that was made against the work. Verse 19, but when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard it, they mocked us and despised us and said, what is this thing you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? The accusation they're making is that you're going to rebel against the king. You're going to rebuild this city. You're going to fortify it. And therefore, you're going to rebel against the king. And that king would have been Artaxerxes. Of course, Nehemiah's got approval from him. Nehemiah's already told the people, here's what God is going to do with, you know, what he has done good for me so far. And here's the letter from the king. And here's what the king has told me. So there's not a whole lot of stock that you could put into them. But they could raise a lot of problems with the other people, the other Jews, because right now they've not been assaulted. They've not had any problem with the government at that time. But now you could have armies coming in because of, well, you're rebelling against the king. So that accusation is made against them in hopes that the accusation was that this work that was going to be done, that they could rebel against the king, would be stopped, that the people would become discouraged in it and stop. Once the walls and the gates would be restored, then the city could easily be defended against an enemy or an army. And that's what Sanballat and them were trying to bring forth and accuse on that. Gershom here is listed as another with Sanballat and Tobiah who were against the work. He's mentioned here as the Arabian who were the descendants of Hagar. All three nationalities are associated as being enemies against Israel. When you look at Psalms chapter 83, Psalms chapter 83, verses 1 through 8, Psalmist said, O God, do not remain quiet. Do not be silent, and O God, do not be still. But for behold, thy enemies make an uproar, and those who hate thee have exalted themselves. They make shrewd plans against the people, and conspire together against thy treasured ones. They have said, come and let us wipe out as a nation, that the name of Israel be remembered no more. For they have conspired together and with one mind against thee to make a covenant. The tents of Edom and the Ishlamites, Moab, the Hagrites, Jebal and Ammon and Amalek, Philistia with the inhabitants of Tyre, Assyria also has joined with them. They have become a help to the children of Lot. Deal with them as with Midian, as with Sisera and Javan at the torrent of Kishon. Again, it's brought out. Here's the enemies. When you look at verse 6 in Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 6 of Psalms 83. When you look at verse 6, it talks about the tents of Edom and the Ishmaelites, Moab and the Hagrites. These again are Edom, Moab, and those that are descendants of Hagar. When you look back at Genesis chapter 17, and verse 20. Genesis 17 and verse 20, the Lord told Abraham, because he was the first that was born through Hagar, as for Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I will bless him and will make him fruitful and will multiply him exceedingly. He shall become the father of 12 princes, and I will make him a great nation. And the Lord came through with that and did. In 1 Chronicles, the 5th chapter. 1 Chronicles, the 5th chapter. Verse 10, and in the days of Saul, they made war with the Hagrites, who fell by their hands, so that they occupied their tents throughout all the land east of Gilead. The Hagrites were those that were descendants through Hagar. When you look at chapter 27 of 1 Chronicles, chapter 27 and verse 31, and Jaaz the Haggite had charge of all the flocks. All these were overseers of the property which belonged to King David. These were natural enemies, again, of Israel. And so you have that group that is established here. Sanballat, Tobiah, and Gershom. The answer that Nehemiah gives them was twofold when you look at the answer in verse 20. He says, in chapter 2, I said to them in verse 17, you see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate and the gates burn by fire. Come, let us build. And I told them in verse 18 how God had been with him and that they put their hands to the good work. Now when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite, officials in Gershom, heard it, they said that we were rebelling. Here's the reply of Nehemiah in verse 20. So I answered them and said to them, the God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and build, but you have no portion, right, or memorial in Jerusalem. The twofold answer here is, number one, the first one is that God would prosper them. And since they, Nehemiah and the Jews, were his servants, they would arise and build. He places his dependency upon God, first of all. God's the one that's going to prosper us. And since we are serving him, he will bless us in this work. The second part of this was that with Sanballat, Tobiah, and Gershom being foreigners, that they were aliens, that they had no portion, nor right, nor memorial concerning the city of Jerusalem. They were outsiders. They wouldn't have had any part. What part would they have had in the service of any of the temple service or anything in the city of Jerusalem? They would not have had any. Jerusalem was the city of where the Jews came, where the temple was, where the priests would have been doing the officiating for all the people. And so, therefore, with the priests, they had to be from the tribes and so forth. No one could just do that. And that is why he's saying, you guys have no right, no portion, nor lot in this. Because you're not part of it. even though they're trying to discourage it and so forth, he again makes it clear. God's going to prosper us. We're the servants of God. You have no right, no portion, no memorial in it. And so far, that was his answer that he gave to them. Would that work for long? Not necessarily, because they didn't give up. Okay. In the middle of this, in chapter 3, you go through where chapter 3 contains a listing of the record of all those involved in the rebuilding of the walls and the gates of Jerusalem. So with this, again, like we said when we started out, do not read this as it's happening in real time. This is recorded and wrote afterwards. Okay? Remember that, because that's why some you may think, well, how does this place? And then you get into chapter 4, chapter 5, and 6, and they're talking about building a wall. This is all recorded afterwards. So here's a listing of the people in chapter 3. According to the record in Ezra, as far as Ezra's record, when you look at chapter 2, verses 64 and 65, there were 44,114 registered men that came back to Jerusalem, to give you some idea as far as how many were there. In chapter 2, verse 64, the whole assembly numbered were 42,360. Verse 65, and besides their male and female servants, who numbered 7,337, and they had 200 singing men and women. We find that there were 42,360 registered besides the 7,337 was Zerubbabel. And there were 1,754 people who came back with Ezra. When you look at chapter 8 of Ezra, verses 15 through 20, when they assembled there at the river, Ahava, where we camped for 3 days, when I observed the people and the priest, I did not find any Levites there. So I sent for them for teachers, and I sent to them and the temple servants at the place, that is to bring ministers to us for the house of our God. And according to verse 18, to the good hand of our God upon us, they brought us a man of insight, of the sons of Mahli, the sons of Levi, the sons of Israel, and the sons and brothers, 18 men. And then the next group with those, 20 men, and 220 of the temple servants. So there you would have had 1,754. Remember that this group, they did not all settle in Jerusalem. They did not settle in the city. They went to many other cities and places outside in Israel. And that's where they assembled. That's where they went to their own inheritance. Because if you remember, each man had his own inheritance. The land was divided up back in Joshua's time. They received their inheritance, and that's where the men would have went back to. They went to their inheritance. In Nehemiah, the 11th chapter, and verse 20, we know this where it says, and the rest of Israel and of the priests and Levites were in all the cities of Judah, each on his own inheritance. You have the same thing in Ezra chapter 2. And verse 1, now these are the people of Providence who came up out of the captivity of the exiles whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away to Babylon and returned to Jerusalem and Judah, each one to his city. In verse 70, now the priests and Levites and some of the people, the singers and gatekeepers and the temple servants lived in their cities and all Israel in their cities. When you go back to Nehemiah chapter 7, and verse 73. Now the priests, Levites, the gatekeepers, the singers, and some of the people, the temple servants, and all Israel lived in their cities. And in the 11th chapter, verses 1 and 2. Now the leaders of the people lived in Jerusalem, but the rest of the people cast lots to bring one out of 10 to live in Jerusalem. People all scattered about after everything is rebuilt in Jerusalem. They cast lots to see, we need to bring some people back into Jerusalem. That's what chapter 11 is talking about. So they cast lots to bring one out of 10 to live in Jerusalem, the holy city, while 9/10 remained in the other cities. And the people blessed all the men who volunteered to live in Jerusalem. So again, bear in mind, there's a limited, very limited number in Jerusalem because it's all broke down, it's all destroyed, and there's just a very few that are living there. Most of them have already been established, already in outlying regions, in their own cities, in their own inheritance parts, and that's where they've that's where they're making their home, and so forth. This is why there are but few people living in Jerusalem, and why the city was so long in being rebuilt before Nehemiah came. Again, we see from Nehemiah chapter 11, verses 1 and 2, that the people had to be drafted from other cities to come and dwell in Jerusalem to rebuild that city. So you can find and see how it's still a reproach because the city is tore down, nobody's wanting to go there and live, and it's a reproach to others. And those that are enemies of Israel detested Israel so bad that they wanted it to remain a reproach among the nations, which that would easily have been seen, because why did God allow this to happen to His people? And you have to go back and remember what we established in the first. Why was the reason that God allowed this to happen to His people? Is it because God had gave up on them? Is it because God didn't care for them? Was it because God wasn't their God anymore? But why did He allow this to happen? Why did He allow it? Their own rebellion when they were how? When they were in captivity or when they were not in captivity? When they weren't in captivity, it was their own rebellion. They didn't keep the commandments that they were of God. And God had already said, this is going to come about upon you. So this is what happened. We find in chapter 3, men from other cities or regions who came to help and complete the walls of Jerusalem. You have in chapter 3 and verse 2, you have the men of Jericho. Next to him, the men of Jericho built. In chapter 3 and verse 5, you have the men of Tekoa that were helping in building. In verse 7 of chapter 3, you have the men of Gibeon. In verse 7, you also have the men of Mizpah. In verse 13, you have the men of Zanoah. In verse 16, you have the men of Bethzur. In 17 and 18, you have the men of Keliah. And in verse 22, you have the men of the plain. So you have all these people that are coming together that are helping to rebuild the wall, this set. And that's what chapter 3 deals with. The sheep gate mentioned in verse 1 here that was being repaired by the high priest. The priest, and they built the sheep gate. When you think of this, that the sheep gate would have been used as an entrance for the sheep to be brought in for the sacrifices to be offered, why would they be the ones that would be repairing the sheep gate? Is there any reason why they would have been the ones that would have been in charge of that they would have took that responsibility? According to verse 1, what was that they did? When you look at all the items that they had with the tabernacle, what did the priest have to do? What did the high priest have to do to the items that were used with the tabernacle?
Set them apart.
And that's basically what they called. They had to sanctify it. They had to cleanse it. They had to consecrate it, set it apart. Here the gate was destroyed. You have a brand new gate. What would the priest automatically, or the high priest, have to do? Consecrated. And that's why in verse 1 it said they consecrated the wall and that gate, because that would be the entrance that would be set apart for a sacred use. And that entrance would have been where they would have been bringing in the sheep and so forth, the animals for sacrifice. They would be held in the court there out in Jerusalem, and they would have been held within the inner walls there of the court, and they would have easy access over to the altar and the temple and so forth. So naturally, it would have been a responsibility of the high priest to consecrate that. Would they have to consecrate any other? They wouldn't have to. Just this one here, because it was set apart for a sacred use. We can see in chapter 3 and verse 12 that women were also involved in the rebuilding of the walls, where you have Shallum and his daughters in chapter 3 and verse 12. And next to him, Shallum the son of Hosha, the official of half the district of Jerusalem, made repairs, he and his daughters. So it involved all those that were doing that. A note to consider is with Elisha, with being the high priest. We can see in chapter 3 and verse 1 that he and the high priest were earnest in helping with the material work, but he was negligent of what was needed in the spiritual work. He helped with the physical, but he was negligent in the spiritual work, and him being the high priest. We see in chapter 13 and verse 4 that in having the oversight of the chamber of the house of God, he had allied himself with Tobiah and had committed evil in what Elisha did for Tobiah by providing him a chamber in the courts of the house of God in chapter 13, verses 7 and 8. He did wrong. Tobiah should have not been there in that sacred place, in the temple and within that area. So you have Elisha that placed a lot of emphasis here on let's get the physical work done, but as far as maintaining the spiritual work, Nehemiah had to go up against him and chastise him because he did this wrong, when we'll get over to that chapter and look at it, because he allowed an alien or a foreigner in there to be doing that work. Something that we need to be note of now, which is most important? Not taking away from either one, but which takes precedent, which takes priority? The physical aspect or the spiritual aspect? The physical aspect was, okay, yes, it is important to maintain the grounds, the building, and so forth. That is important. But is what is the most important of the work? To take care of the physical part of the building and the upkeep and so forth, or to take care of the spiritual part? The spiritual part. And that's what needs to be the focus of. And here, again, you can see that even when Ezra came back to restore some of the spiritual part, they had the high priest, the priest, and so forth, but yet they were still not totally in compliance with the spiritual aspect that they should be. That's chapter 3. Any question or comment? Thank you.